Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to Heartland Politics on KBUR AM-FM in Burlington, Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and today our focus is on the news media, specifically how it's changed over the years, the impact of social media, and what this holds for the future of reporting and journalism, especially in the realm of American politics. I have as my guest a good friend of mine, and he's a distinguished former senior vice president of NBC News and former executive producer of NBC Nightly News. He's Joe Angotti. He was also NBC's vice president and executive producer of election programs anchored by Tom Brokaw during the 1980s. He's an Emmy Award winner. He's also taught journalism at Monmouth College and Northwestern University, and we're really lucky to have him on today to kind of offer his look at modern political journalism, especially compared with his heyday back in what we call the golden era, perhaps, of investigative journalism. Joe, thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, let's talk briefly here a little bit about your background and how you got into journalism, but what was your first breakthrough working in journalism?
Well, my first job out of college was at WHAS in Louisville, Kentucky, and I was the overnight radio writer. And in order to make up for being on such a lousy shift, they gave me they let me do the 5:30 a.m. news. And just to show you how much things have changed over the years, I delivered the news in a large studio where there was a country music station, or a country music band, Shorty Rogers. When I first met Shorty, he said, "I don't think I've ever had to mention or mention an Italian name on the air." and he couldn't for some reason. I always thought my name was pretty easy to pronounce, but he had trouble with it. So every time he would introduce me, he would just say, "Here's old Joe with the news." And then the drummer would do a little drum roll, and it was great fun until the news director heard the news one morning and said, "Let's cut out the drum roll and the funny business and just do the news." So that was my first job.
From that humble start, you rose quickly and wound up at NBC, one of the three top stations. I remember growing up in the 60s, that's what you watched. You had three choices. And you really, I call it the golden era of broadcasting in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s. But you also covered some critical events in our country's history, especially the year of 1968. Share with our audience a little bit about your experiences at that year.
Well, 1968, as you know, was a violent year, and in many ways it was terrifying for those of us who worked in the news business. I was both a field producer during that decade and then a producer of news programs. There are a couple of things that jump out at me when I think back on 1968. One was the assassination of Martin Luther King, which I was involved in an unusual way. On the night that King was killed, it was shortly after Nightly News went off the air, and I was on the network desk in Chicago. All the video of the Martin Luther King speech that he gave in Memphis the night before was shipped to Chicago. And when Nightly News was over, the producers of Nightly News came in and said, the Chicago Bureau, he said, "There was something he said that we didn't have time to go back and listen to, and you might want to go back and listen to it." So an editor and I went back and went through the video. It was film then, not video. And we were listening to it, and then bam, we got to the part where he said, "I've been to the mountaintop. I have a dream." And we immediately fed that to New York, and it was the lead of the network news special that night on the death of Martin Luther King.
The access to that speech made his assassination almost, it seemed like he knew it was coming or had some sense.
Oh, it was. It was almost a premonition of what was to come.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and of course we had, we were getting more mired in Vietnam during that time, protests. It was just a really, I tell the students in the class I teach now, it was such a transformational year. in America, and especially in politics with the assassinations in Vietnam and what was going on, and you got to be right in the middle of that as a journalist. What I want you to share too before we get to some other topics, just the specifics of the Emmy Award. I had never seen one in Rio, and you do have one. You allowed me to touch it, but just share a little bit how that grew, how you got to be nominated for that, and what the specifics for earning that award.
I was working on NBC Nightly News in New York at the time, and we did a many-part series on hunger in the world. Started out being a series on hunger in America and then spread to the world. And I think it was six parts to the special programs that we were doing weekly on NBC Nightly News. And my experience with covering world hunger led to what was probably my most meaningful thing that I did at NBC News, was the Ethiopia famine. I was in London at the time, responsible for news of Europe and Africa. And I got a call one day from our stringer cameraman down in Africa, in Kenya. And he said, I have been talking to people who have just come out of Ethiopia, and they tell me that there's been a biblical famine that's taking place in Ethiopia right now. And I think you ought to send somebody down to join me, and we'll cover the story. So I talked to New York and said, we really need to cover this, and we need to charter somebody down right away. And New York didn't have a very good response to that. It was during politics. They said, we have a really full show. Why don't you ship the story in, and we'll put it on in a week or two. And then I started hearing more about the famine, and I called back and I said, we really need to do this now. Well, we don't have the money to do this, and they downplayed the story. I finally called the BBC. We had an arrangement with the British Broadcasting Company to share a video, and they said, yeah, we'll send a correspondent, you send a crew, we'll pick up your crew, and we'll pay for the charter, which I knew New York wouldn't see the price for that in a while. And so a crew went down there, and it was a biblical famine, and it became a major, major story that we broke. The day after we put that story on the air, the switchboard at NBC just lit up, with people wanting to know what they could do, how could they donate money. Recording artists, some of the leading recording artists, put together a song called We Are the World, We Are the People. That's where that song came from. And every news organization in the country after that, the very next day, sent people in to cover the story. And it was a meaningful story, and I'm proud of NBC for finally getting it on the air.
A great example of how journalism can really shape policy and people's awareness of key issues around the world. I mean, one more topic I wanted to bring up is you got to work closely with Tom Brokaw, and that was really, as I describe it, a golden era, I think. And I remember when journalists weren't really as much celebrities as they used to be with. And with the rise of Woodward and Bernstein and Watergate, the journalists became more known as kind of media celebrities. How was it working like with a Tom Brokaw back then? Was he did he handle that celebrity well, or was he more down to earth? Describe working with him.
He never considered himself a celebrity. I mean, he always thought of himself as newsman first, and almost resented being considered a celebrity. He even disliked the idea of being called an anchor, because that doesn't say newsman. But one of the things that I liked most about Brokaw as a producer and having to work with him was that he was absolutely fantastic at being able to take direction in his ear through an earpiece. And very few people back then were doing much live. But he didn't want to avoid live broadcasts, and he didn't want to avoid being directed through his earpiece, as opposed to Walter Cronkite, who was our big competitor at the time. I love Walter Cronkite. I think he was a wonderful person, but he could not take direction in his ear. So he would have, the way the CBS Evening News was set up, there was Cronkite's desk, and then there was a little desk down below him who was on a riser. And when the producer in the air would say, "Let's go to Leslie's stall at the White House," he would never hear that, but the little man below him would hear it, and he'd write it down, "Leslie's stall at the White House," and he'd hand it up to Walter, and Walter would read it. And again, I don't mean to be, to talk poorly about Walter Cronkite, because he was terrific, but that was one of the things that Brokaw did. He was exceptional at it.
So we're in an era now of fake news, of supreme distrust of the mainstream media, a time when people, our leaders and even our citizens can't even agree on what facts are, what truth is. How did we get here? And when did you first start sensing this, that things were changing in the traditional broadcast era we had, where what was said on the news was accepted as gospel?
You know, CNN started in 1980, and we were all very excited. Everybody in the news business was excited about the idea of a 24-hour news channel where you could turn on the radio or watch television and listen to news, that you would get it right then. And it didn't take long for CNN, probably because of ratings, but I'm not sure, began to do less hard news and more analysis. And finally, the evening hours were not filled with news. They were filled with opinion shows, people who expressed opinion more than facts. And that in turn led to what I call a demographic-driven news, where they found out that their audience liked analysis, and in the evening there were particular shows that were successful and some that weren't. And then Fox News came along and MSNBC News came along, and they became heavily involved in demographic-driven news. In other words, news that appealed, that they knew appealed to their demographic audience. And so it was Fox News that began organizing newscasts and news that fit their conservative audience, that they knew was out there, and that they developed their ratings by appealing to that audience. I shouldn't say appealing, by directing the news to that audience. And then MSNBC, which went through several different, I mean, for a while it was celebrity news and different news, they finally decided that for some reason, probably because of ratings, that they would be able to compete with Fox Best if they did. They had a liberal angle to their news. So we're at the point now where newscasts, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them, are making selections about news stories and the presentation of news and the writing and the coverage, because they want to please an audience. They want to give an audience what they want to hear, which is a terribly dangerous thing, because people are beginning to tune in to those networks wanting to hear what they agree with and not wanting to hear what other people, you know, disagree with. So that's a development that I find very disturbing, and I wish it would go back to the way it was.
You can pick your own news, basically.
You can pick your own news, exactly.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on KBUR-AM-FM, Burlington, Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Joe Angotti, who's a former senior vice president of NBC News, former executive producer of the NBC Nightly News. He's an Emmy Award winner. Later in his career, he finished up. He taught at Northwestern University and then at Monmouth College, a great asset at Monmouth. And we're talking a little bit, Joe talked a little bit about his background in the news reporting industry and circumstances of his Emmy Award, and we've started talking a little bit about the differences in journalism now with back in what I've called the golden era, really, of journalism that seems a long time ago. Where I know, based on us talking and all, you used to, and I think you still do, watch both Fox News and CNN and occasionally MSNBC.
I do, every night.
Is there a source for people out there interested in the old-fashioned news reporting with a minimum of analysis? Is there any place that provides that anymore?
Well, I think PBS provides that to an extent, but and I have a lot of friends who work at PBS, so I hesitate saying anything bad about them. But PBS has gone to the other extreme and is very boring.
Boring.
A lot of people just can't get really involved with PBS News because it's not done in a way that attracts people and provides action and interest. I think CNN, for of all the cable news outlets, CNN is probably the most inclined to take a non-biased view of the news. At least during the day. At night, they get a little carried away with interview programs that are pretty liberal. But for the most part, of all the cable news organizations, I think CNN is the closest to being an objective news organization.
Yeah, that's the challenge, is a lot of these shows that do provide hard news can be called just boring. But I remember it was CNN, you were talking there, they used to have a show called, it pitted a left-wing reporter, Tom Braden at the time, with Pat Buchanan, Crossfire. And all they would do would be argue. And I think conflict sold more then, and maybe this kind of caused more of the partisanship and that we're seeing now. That seemed to be the seeds of it back in the 1980s with the advent of cable TV news.
I think that's right.
I think the President Trump and some of his supporters aren't totally wrong when they take aim at some members of the media for being biased and trying to be fair about it. It seems like reporters are no longer objective like they perhaps used to be, especially when I see some of the reporters' social media feeds. They don't hide the fact that of their personal opinions. And we know reporters have opinions, but it just seems to me that they never used to share them, or you never knew them. Is that something that's kind of harming mainstream media, and they're bringing some of this criticism on fairly?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of reasons why the cable networks are very hard on President Trump. The biggest reason is because he started it. I mean, he was very early on called the news an enemy of the people. And you can't hear things like that without having a visceral negative opinion of the person who's saying that if you're in the news business. So I go back to the very beginnings, when Trump was very anti-news, really before the news became anti-Trump. And I think the first thing that he objected to was the crowd at his inauguration. He did not like the idea that the news media, the mainstream media, were questioning the size of his inauguration crowd. And that just kind of immediately set the news organizations off and tipped them off and decided that maybe not knowingly, that they were beginning to develop an anti-Trump attitude. Since then, it's become a lot of other things that have developed that. But the whole idea, I mean, most people in the news business went into the business because they wanted to make a difference. And when they hear things that seem really outrageous to them, that President Trump says, that no president prior to him has ever said, I think it's natural for them to develop an attitude where maybe Trump needs to be questioned a little harder than others, and direct more attention to the downside of him as a president than the positive side.
So first you had this wave of cable TV in the 80s, and then you had social media that's really impacted our news, to say the least, which Twitter, of course, was kind of out there as a social media device. And when Donald Trump started using it as a major part of his campaign strategy, it's just exploded. Everybody knows what Twitter is now. What's your thoughts that? That seems to me that it's just kind of amplified the original impact that cable TV had on journalism.
It has, and it for the worse. The thing that I don't understand about social media is that in all of the media that preceded it, there was always an editorial check. Somebody was always saying, whether it was the head of a network or there was somebody else, that, hey, that's not true. We can't put that on. There are things that we were told we could never do. And abided by that, and now it happens all the time. There's no editorial check on what appears on social media, on any of them. And I know the people are trying to work around that now, but I think it's been just a disaster, because it's so easy for a foreign government like Russia to begin posting things on social media, and nobody's really there checking it. And there's no editor in all the other media. There's an editor who's the final say and says, yeah, we can do this, or no, we can't do this. There's no such person on social media.
And with I want to ask you about the future of journalism, what you see going forward. We've got newspapers declining across the country. We've had more people depending, especially younger audiences, on social media, on cable, for their news. You mentioned PBS, which is kind of, we agree, is kind of a boring source. But where do you see this going? And are there any other sources for people out there that really would like just hard facts for them to go to kind of get the truth of what's really out there to help them decide who to support, who to vote for?
Unfortunately, I don't think there are that many sources out there that people could turn to for a totally, totally neutral presentation of political news. One of the interesting things about the future is that the reporters who are reporting now on social media and also on the internet, they've developed a really good cast of people, reporters, who are now working for organizations like Politico and things, that are biased in some places, but they're conservative, both conservative and liberal. I can remember a time when newspaper reporters were not allowed to appear on television newscasts because they thought that it diluted their responsibility, but now, you can't watch MSNBC or CNN or any without on an evening without tons of newspaper people on panels from the Washington Post, from the New York Times, So I think in many respects, the news business is starting to come back around through organizations like Politico and some of the others. And I think that's the future. And I think maybe it's not going to be ever going to be like it was in the past in the golden era. But I think it's coming back around. I'm optimistic.
Well, that's good to hear. Let's wrap this up. I got one more question here. We're a little over. But I wanted to talk to you about your experience in presidential campaigns. We're in the midst of a very crowded Democratic primary run, which is going to start here in Iowa February 3rd with the caucuses. Specifically, debates have been controversial. There's so many candidates. But how did – you were involved in producing debates back in your time at NBC. Kind of rate how these debates are now and how you did it back then, and maybe offer advice on how they can be made better now.
I think for the most part, the debates have just been terrible. And there are a couple of reasons for that. Some of them are pretty cosmetic reasons. For one thing, that the people who are asking questions are asking people, asking candidates who are seated, not even seated, standing behind podiums 20, 30, 40 feet away. And I don't think there's really a good way. I don't think it's easy for candidates to respond or news people to ask questions when there's that kind of distance. The first debate I did, I produced, was at Kennedy Center in Washington. And we had set up kind of a little jury box where there were six candidates in that debate. And they were seated behind a little in an area where Brokaw could walk right up to them and ask them questions, and then walk over to the next person or walk over to this person. And it just lent itself to information being displayed and presented to the public in a more intimate way. I think these debates that are done now, largely because there are too many of them, which isn't a fault of the producers or the news organization, but back then, the more intimate kind of setup was very conducive to getting more information to the public.
I like the courtroom setting. Just have them put them in the witness chair and then swear on the Bible before that they're telling the truth. That would probably help.
Right.
Well, we're out of time. I suspect we could talk a lot longer about this. It's a very important topic because democracy is dependent on an educated citizenry, and if we can't get basic facts as citizens, or if they're difficult to find, it's going to impact us, and I think we're seeing that more and more. But Joanne Gotti has been our guest today, former vice president at NBC News, NBC Nightly News, Emmy Award winner, and I have to add former professor at Monmouth College, put the local plug in. Joe's been our guest today, and thank you very much, Joe, for sharing your time.
My pleasure.